last week, Fresno Mayor Lee Brand introduced a new initiative aimed at combating a huge problem here in the Valley: human trafficking. The initiative brings together city government, law enforcement, and aid organizations, many of which have been addressing trafficking for years. Today in our studio, we hear from Miko Anderson, a senior deputy district attorney with the County of Fresno, and Deborah Rush, founder and CEO of the nonprofit organization Breaking the Chains. So Miko, let's start with you. What kind of trafficking happens in the San Joaquin Valley today, and how common is it?
Well, there are so many different types of trafficking, and we believe to some degree they all happen within the San Joaquin Valley. There's the international trafficking, there's labor trafficking, as well as sex trafficking, and for the most part that is domestic. The trafficking that is at least reported most is the domestic sex trafficking, and those are the cases that I work most frequently.
And when you say domestic, I mean that means that those are people who are American being trafficked by other Americans.
Absolutely.
And so the district attorney's office itself created a human trafficking task force a few years ago. So tell me about how that works.
Well, the human trafficking task force is one that meets at one of the offices at the district attorney's office. And it includes several different agencies, federal agencies, state agencies, non-governmental agencies. And the purpose is so we can get together and come up with either a common attack or a comprehensive plan to attack the human trafficking. And then there's a portion of that task force meeting that's law enforcement only, so we can exchange intel and figure out the best way to combat some of the specific challenges we might have in our cases.
And how much, you know, what proportion of these cases actually end up being prosecuted?
It's really difficult to quantify. Because the way it works is not all trafficking cases get reported to law enforcement. So I only see the ones that actually get reported to law enforcement. By the time they get reported to law enforcement, there's generally enough evidence that I would pick up the case and file it for prosecution. But the part that happens that's out of law enforcement's view, that part, I kind of don't have the data on because it doesn't get reported.
How big a region does the San Joaquin Valley appear to be when it comes to trafficking compared to others? I mean, is it as common here as we might see elsewhere, or is it more common?
I feel like, and this is not necessarily statistic-based, that it is more common here. And the reason I say that, because I've gone through several trainings that pull in people from other offices, different part of the state, and even different part of the country. And at least as far as California goes, when it comes to other law enforcement agencies, it was to the point where we were being approached. And they were questioning us on why they were getting so many of our either sex traffickers or victims there in their county. So because of our location being so centrally located, a lot of it, it's grown here. And unfortunately, it's one of those things that seems to be exported out to other communities.
Wow. Well, so Deborah, tell me about what Breaking the Chains does and how that fits into, you know, all this this whole other network of services that exist here in this area.
So we're a 501c3 charitable organization, and we provide residential and non-residential services to juvenile and adult female victims of domestic sex trafficking. We do work with a lot of human trafficking in totality, which means like domestic servitude and labor trafficking, but typically we hold hands in those areas with other partners like Fresno County EOC and Central La Familia. What we do in both of those aspects is we're providing trauma treatment services. So for our residential, it is quite frankly that we have individuals who live on campus with us who also live at other collaborative campuses that we work with. And then for our non-residential, they live in CSEC foster homes, group homes, other shelters or program-like environments, or may just be in an independently healthy living environment that they have prearranged. And then they come Monday through Friday for everything from trauma counseling, life skills workshops, educational courses. We help with job placement, job reintegration. And I think the best way to kind of wrap all that together is we do life. We help them get from the point of rescue into becoming healthy thrivers back in the community and doing what they were originally meant to do before they were knocked off trajectory through this incredibly tragic event.
And Deborah, you yourself are a survivor of human trafficking.
I am.
It was about 20 years ago, if I understand correctly, that you were rescued from those circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how does that experience inform what you do?
Oh, it 100% it informs what we do. It informs what we do because in 1999, when I was rescued, the blanket attempt was made to relocate me to Northern California. There were no services that were provided. I've coined the phrase a teacup method was placed in my life, which means it was kind of not talked about, right? You are rescued, you're out of the situation, you're here, you're safe. Now let's just move on with life. Let's kind of dust your knees off. For me, there was a faith-based aspect, so I was told to just go to the altar, give it to Jesus, right? And everything's going to be great. But that's not what happened. I started experiencing, very soon afterwards, I started experiencing what we now know as compound complex PTSD. I was having trouble operating in public. I was filled with so much anxiety that I was having panic attacks. I was beginning to have mild hallucinations. I was self-harming, self-loathing. All those different unhealthy characteristics were coming out to where I really couldn't function. And so what ended up happening is I ended up self-medicating. And that self-medicating led to an incredibly horrific drug habit, which eventually led me back here to Fresno, where I was re-exploited again, right? I self-exploited myself again just because of the drug habit. I was so desensitized and detached from everything that had happened around me. It was really when they say some of these women and children we run across are like walking zombies. That's exactly what it is. So when we developed Breaking the Chains, we knew there had to be something beyond the rescue. And again, I don't want to minimize anything that anybody in this country is doing, but I mm-hmm. think that for me as a survivor, not just as a leader, it is so incredibly arrogant for people to believe that you could rescue a woman or a child from a situation that is this vicious, which quite frankly is the greatest modern day atrocity we are seeing domestically, and simply give them like a paint night and like, hey, let's rescue them. Let's stick them here in a place, give them some food and everything's going to be well. Talk to these officers and life's going to go on or give them a job and that's all they need, right? Nothing's further from the truth.
You were a walking example of all of these wraparound services that needed to be done.
Absolutely.
And Miko, what's then needed to prosecute these cases? Because a lot of them happen. And then, as you said, not all of them actually get to the point of prosecution. You know, what are kind of the missing links there in some of these?
I guess the biggest missing link is the initial reporting. So and that's something that if we could get the message out to anyone who is a victim of human trafficking, that they would be, and I think the tide is turning, but they would be respected. And we will work alongside the victims' advocates to make the criminal prosecution as least intrusive as it could possibly be, because we know it is a big ordeal unto itself. But we do really try to work with the nonprofits so that the reporting can actually happen. So whatever deterrent that they may have, whether it be fear, whether it be even the bond that they may have with the trafficker, that they can still work through that and report to law enforcement. But once that law enforcement report occurs, our office is pretty aggressive in how we prosecute. So if we can prove the case, and most times we have to, without the cooperation of the victim, or without her participation, and usually it's female, but trafficking happens to male victims as well. But if we can prove the case without the participation of the victim, we will.
And last year here in Fresno County was the county's first conviction of a labor trafficking case, correct? I mean, how momentous was that?
That was huge. And that was done by my partner. Her name is Lynette Gonzalez, and she's the other DA who works in our human trafficking unit. And that was huge. And that was one of those cases where it really took an entire village to get that case to trial. So that the case was huge, and it was a great success for our county.
And we know that labor trafficking happens here in this area.
It definitely does. And that's why I said it's difficult to say which occurs more, because the domestic sex trafficking is reported more. Mm-hmm. But in actuality, all facts and data show that the labor trafficking is actually occurring more. But there are just different hurdles and challenges to getting those reports.
So, you know, what has changed with all this added attention to the human trafficking problem over the last couple of years? I mean, are there any indications that the situation is changing or improving at all? Or are we still kind of getting a hold of just exactly what's happening in this area?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I think I think the public is finally getting to have their eyes opened to everything that's going on. But I think at the same time, there's a movement, definitely movement going forward, because there's a message getting put out because of the prosecution and the amazing cases that Miko and Lynette have been able to prosecute. It's funny, and I'll be, excuse me, kind of ghetto when I say this, but I've heard law enforcement say, and I know you could probably attest to this, that in jail recordings and things, they're hearing other gang members tell other gang members, like, basically, this is a life case. You need to leave those girls alone. And so that's important. And I want to say, not to change the trajectory of what we're talking about, is when we're voting, whenever we're going to the polls, when we're talking about the new laws and all the new things that are coming into effect, we need to understand that our laws need to have teeth. Those teeth is what helps us prevent other children, not only from being trafficked, but individuals from getting into this. Trafficking is a business, just like drugs and guns and so many of these other criminal activities that are occurring in our communities. And because they operate like business, it's all about profit and loss, and it's all about risk and benefit, right? And so if we make the risk greater than the benefit, the likelihood of young men getting involved in this, we're saving too. We're saving the victims, and we're also saving our young men who potentially are looking at life sentences, if not death or more.
And some women do get involved with in trafficking as well, right?
They do.
Oh, absolutely. I have cases where we have female defendants. That is a new trend, in fact, that the women are trafficking. And one of the reasons that it can be sold like so successfully to a victim, because part of that fraud and coercion and telling the victim the initial lie, is that the violence that was present with the male may not be present with the female. It seems like a glamorous lifestyle, then you can almost pervert it sense of feminism. Right. But in actuality, the violence is still there, and the detrimental harm is still there to the victim. It does not change as far as the consequences of the victim suffers.
And so then, Miko, you know, what do you think? Have you been able to witness any changes over the last couple of years?
I have, in the sense that there is a greater awareness of being trauma-informed and recognizing a victim as a victim and looking beyond what even a flat police report may tell you. It's changed with law enforcement. It changed with people who I speak with, and maybe they just don't want to say anything else in front of me, but it changes with people who I speak with, and they kind of get that understanding. What, though, troubles me the most, I think, when it comes to some of those changes is that in our community, there's still pockets where we haven't reached, and there's still almost systematic or institutionalized areas that we need to really focus on and educate. So a lot of my cases, and it's very even tragic to even recognize that these are our victims, but a lot of my cases are from group homes. And even though we've made efforts to educate those in the group homes and the staff, the fact of that circumstance doesn't change. So even with a criminal prosecution, one of the things, and that's why the mayor's initiative is important, was the coordination of services, but having services that are actually meaningful. So not just that you give somebody a list, a referral of doctors they can speak to, and then when you call the list, there's nobody who's available. Having actual services that are meaningful and they actually are effective. So I feel like we're at like stage one, stage two, but we need to bring it down to where in practice the victim is actually getting the services and resources that they really need.
And so last week, Mayor Lee Brand introduced a new human trafficking initiative. What does it do that's different from what your organizations and other agencies were already doing?
Well, what it does is it actually brings City Hall into the loop, which is huge. Right? It really does exactly as Miko was just stating. It brings that culmination in, makes sure that services that are being provided have a validity behind them and that people know where to go, what to do, and the process in which that takes, and make sure that everybody's holding hands. One of my favorite things that the initiative brings is the data. Having cumulative data that is accurate, that is really showing what is going on here in Fresno, will not only help us begin to present a better look at to what we need to do and where we need to develop our services in the areas of focus, it's going to help bring resources here. I know before we went on air, Miko was talking about the potentially having a new task force formed within the police department and then having resources poured into other areas, some of our organizations, and begin to kind of get a look at what needs to be strengthened and what we're doing well. And that's going to be a great asset to us.
I think the significance of the mayor's initiative, I think the biggest part that impacts me as far as prosecution is having a team, organized team from the city that directly addresses all the things that were challenges and obstacles. So I'm really looking forward to not just the collaboration, but to, like I said, we really need the practical effect of everybody working at the same time doing the same thing.
I've been speaking with Miko Anderson, Senior Deputy District Attorney with the County of Fresno, and Deborah Rush, CEO and founder of Breaking the Chains. Thank you both so much.
Thank you for inviting us here.
Yeah, I'm incredibly honored to have been able to be a part of this today.